This legislative session, the Connecticut legislature passed House Bill 5468, tightening homeschooling regulations and introducing state oversight really for the first time. It's a new law that actually was meant initially to enhance child safety, but some felt it was a direct attack on homeschooling families. I wanted to hear from someone other than lawmakers, because depending on which side of the aisle, there were some that were totally in agreement that this should have happened a long time ago. Others who felt like this was unnecessary legislation. And again, an attack on homeschooling families. Let's talk to people who actually homeschool their kids. And we're getting that perspective now. Sylvia Duarte is known as the former TV news reporter turned homeschooling mom. She also has worked in outreach for the National Hybrid Schools Project and has connected with homeschoolers here in Connecticut and across the country, and joins us now. Sylvia, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. How are you?
Sure. Very good. Excited to be here. Thank you.
I'm glad to have you here. And can I also mention you are a former Miss Connecticut. So you've got
Correct.
Ties to Connecticut. Yeah, I love that.
I do. Yes. My parents owned a small business on the east end of Bridgeport. We sold thousands of pounds of lobsters to restaurants all over Fairfield County, all the way down into New York City. And we had thousands of customers in Fairfield County, just bait and tackle, shrimp, seafood, et cetera. And so, yes, I went through K through 12 in the Bridgeport public school system.
All right. So you get Connecticut. And listen, Connecticut is full of very passionate people. I'm one of them. And one of the things that I found I kept running into this session, and quite frankly, last session, Sylvia, was perspective. Because, again, depending on which side of the aisle you spoke to, some liked this, others did not. So I have a 7-year-old. He's in the public schools. Let me tell you, Sylvia, if I could figure out tomorrow being able to afford quitting this job, and I love this job. You don't know me, but let me tell you, I love this job. I built this show from the ground up 7 years ago. I love this job. But if I could walk from this job and homeschool my kid for the remainder of his years in school, I would do it tomorrow. I really would. I think what homeschoolers go through is phenomenal. I love that model of teaching. I would love to do the coursework. Like, I would love to do this with my kid. We just cannot afford to do it. That being said, I lack perspective. Right? Because I don't have a kid who is homeschooling. So this is where I think you really are, I think, a paramount voice, where I can better understand this. When I read this legislation, I agree. I think to some degree this is an attack on homeschooling families in the sense that they are kind of scapegoated into, hey, we've had some kids that had horrible things happen to them because they were pulled out of the school district and nobody watched what happened next. So I agree with that. However, when I read this legislation, it seems like it's just an extra step of, hey, just letting you know this is what our kid is going to be doing, and then kind of checking in to make sure that they are progressing and making sure that they are getting the education they need at home. So I'm torn on this one. I've got to be honest. That's where I would love to get your perspective on it.
Yeah, sure. So, okay, we can go to a couple different ways. The first is that there's no real link between regulation and safety. So we have multiple studies throughout the country stating that the relationship between how strict a state's laws are and the rate of homeschool abuse is, there's no correlation. It's zero, right? So homeschool regulation doesn't really save lives. If anything, the data shows the opposite, and that's that homeschool children are safer than the national average. In fact, they're 40% less likely to die from abuse and neglect than your average child in the country. Another place, because you mentioned left and right, something important to think about, and hopefully I can represent homeschoolers properly here, because 1 in 4, if anything close to 1 in 3, is actually a liberal Democrat. And they also use a variety of sources. So I know a family that does private school, they do hybrid school, they do homeschool, and they do public school. So 4 kids doing 4 completely different things. So don't know how they manage that schedule. And then homeschoolers also homeschool for a variety of reasons. The first one that everybody can think of very easily is the academic reasons. My 2 oldest boys are at Georgia Tech. I have a freshman and a junior there. This is an international level STEM school. It's considered a new Ivy by Forbes magazine. They're majoring in, one is biomedical engineering, the other is finance. So academic reasons, right? This has clearly worked out for us academically, even though that's not even the main reason I homeschool. And you have people who homeschool because their kids, this isn't me, but their kids are gifted, or maybe their kids need a little bit of extra help. So they have language processing disorders, or they're neurodivergent in some way, right? And they maybe need more time and less pressure, or they have ADHD, or this one's me, the last two are probably me, field trips. Kids in Bridgeport, I feel like, just need to get out and see the world and see more people, meet more people, see what's out there.
Sylvia, not to interrupt you, but I think in general, they all do. Like, my son is in Milford. He's in Milford Public Schools. And I haven't been unhappy with them, just to be clear. But it shocks me that they have, I think, if we're lucky, two a year that they get out of the classroom and they go do it. And that, sometimes they'll bring people in like presenters. And I think that's great. But to your point, I would love more out of the classroom instruction. I think everybody could benefit from that. Honestly. Mm-hmm. And that's different than Bridgeport, but
Sure. Yeah. Homeschooling is totally a misnomer. And we bought an electric car because I'm never home. So, and if anything, the pandemic, these comments during the pandemic that, we're so sad and lonely homeschooling by ourselves. And it's like, no, homeschoolers are constantly getting together with other people, forming associations, at first loosely with co-ops. And now you're seeing more of this hybrid schools and micro schools popping up all over the place that are more of a structured association. Homeschoolers never homeschool by themselves, right?
I don't know if people know that. That's actually a really great misconception that people have. I think that is one of the biggest reasons people don't homeschool, is they think that they're losing the social element.
Yeah, it's always the very first question. If anything, so I do a little bit of outreach for the National Hybrid Schools Project. It's based at Kennesaw State University, just outside of Atlanta, and it is the only university-based research center on hybrid schools and micro schools. We always think that we just have these three options, right? We can do public school, we can do private school, which is becoming increasingly unaffordable for your average person, even in the middle class.
Insane.
Or we can
yes.
homeschool. Yeah, and that was us. We had our kids at a private school, and it was like, oh, I have more kids now, and tuition is totally skyrocketing. We can't keep going down this road. So if anything, an interesting thing happened here. We had two moms and two sisters who got together and said, okay, we all homeschool. We can't get our laundry done. So you take my kids today, and I'll take your kids tomorrow. And we can get some stuff done around the house. And then their friends heard about this and said, oh, yeah, I want to do that. Oh, yeah, why don't we just home? It'll be fun, you know. Homeschoolers really just have time and fun on their side, right? And so before you knew it, they were renting a church basement. They said, all right, let's all decide what we want the curriculum to be. We will split the cost of renting this church basement. And so now you're going beyond a co-op, right? So a co-op is what homeschoolers have always done. It's this sort of loose association of people, and you get together, and there might be a fee for some crafts, or you might go to a field trip together, or you might have a theme for that semester. You meet maybe once a week or something like that. But this is a little bit more of a structured thing, where the kids are legally, they're homeschooled, but 2 to 3 days a week, they attend what kind of looks like a traditional classroom. So it's best of both worlds. And these schools and these micro schools have about the median for what you want to call tuition, even though the kids are homeschooled, is about $3,000. So totally affordable for the middle class, at least, right? And it's just kind of what makes America great. It's our ability, this art that we have for associating with each other, community crafting education, which is what homeschoolers do. So getting together to solve problems, kind of rolling up our sleeves and doing it all without asking for permission. It's mostly just moms like, hey, I've got a daughter who's a round peg in a square hole, and the school, public school is not working out for her. She's neurodivergent. I'm going to get together with other moms who have the same problem and we're going to figure this out, right? So I don't know if that makes any sense.
We are getting some perspective from homeschooling families following the passage of House Bill 5468, tightening homeschooling regulations. And it really brings more state oversight for the first time. Sylvia Duarte is here. And Sylvia, so it sounds like you homeschooled, you said, both your boys now in college.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When did you start homeschooling them?
So good question. I met a family at church back in 2004-ish. We were attending church for an hour on Sunday morning, and we met this family that sat in front of us week after week. And what got me was, and I didn't have the language to describe this at the time, but they were securely attached to one another. And you can just see it. So if someone would drop something and another sibling would pick it up, or they would hold each other, or they would hug each other, and they'd be poking each other and playing around. It wasn't so much about behavior, like they have this wonderful, have these wonderfully behaved kids. It was that they just genuinely liked each other and were securely attached to one another. So I said, okay, like, I want that for my family. So the mom, her name was Kathy, she said, why don't you come over for dinner and I'll show you. So then, of course, I asked about socialization. I said, you know, I have a one-year-old, how, like, what am I? Of course, well, the funny part of this is, of course, the socialization is what I liked about their family. The fact that they would look you in the eye and could easily talk to each other and liked each other. And she said, okay, why don't you go down? At the time, I don't think they do this anymore, but the Griswold Friary, there's a friary in Griswold, and they were going to have this Lord of the Rings night. And so I showed up, and they had these friars with real swords, and these dads had made a life-size catapult with their kids, and they're all reading books by the fire, and they're roasting, you know, they're roasting food on the fire. And I was like, okay, I want in. This is what I want to do with my family. So that's when I started homeschooling. It was before phones, if anything, before 2006.
That's awesome.
And so that's when we started doing that.
So tell me about this hybrid and micro school option. I mean, again, especially if people are worried about the social aspect, which I think you've already debunked that. But this micro school, I've not heard of, honestly, a hybrid option. You're a homeschooler still, but you have sort of this opportunity to still be in person or kind of in a classroom setting at times.
Right. I've seen anywhere from 1 to 4 days a week. It's usually 2 or 3 days a week that kids are in what looks like a traditional classroom. If anything, our school is a school in the Catholic tradition. It's not a Catholic school. We don't have archdiocesan. We have a relationship with them, but it's still an independent school. To more directly answer your question, they're in school about 2 to 3 days a week. In Fairfield County, micro schools and hybrid schools are a little bit thin, I think, because people can afford the private school option. You'll see more hybrid and private schools, hybrid and micro schools in other parts of the state. And there are fewer homeschoolers in general in Connecticut. You're at about 3%. There are states with 6%, 9% homeschoolers, so you're 2 to 3 times more likely to run into homeschoolers. If anything, it's kind of funny because when I can traipse around downtown Atlanta with my kids all year long, and nobody asks me, why aren't you in school? Yeah. But if I go to Connecticut just to visit family, then I get stopped fairly often. I mean, even in the 2 week period that I'm there, week and a half that I'm there, because school for us ends end of May, and you're still in session through June sometimes. And so if I'm there beginning of June, people will stop you and go, why aren't you in school? You
know? Yeah.
So there's this more culture of suspicion around there that doesn't exist in other parts of the country.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I mean, and again, I like to use the phrase checkmark legislation. And I think there have been some really egregious cases in Connecticut, unfortunately, in the last year and a half, that this was an effort last year. It failed. It didn't fail this year. And I do think to some degree this was legislation to say, hey, we cared about this enough. We addressed it. Do I think it is the end all answer? No, I certainly don't. But I guess getting down to this law, when you look at it, and again, I kind of said this to, you know, lawmakers who actually pushed back against passing it. They were more on the homeschooler side. But I had said, you know, if you look at Connecticut laws right now, so my kid, as I mentioned, is in public school. If he misses 10 days of school, I get a call from DCF because they want to know that I'm not keeping my kid out of school, that if I haven't told the school, I should say accurately, why he has missed those 10 days, I get contacted. Mm-hmm. That is a state law. It passed a couple of years ago, give or take. And so I said, I don't understand why the issue of if you want to pull your kid from school to go to private or to do homeschooling or whatever the case may be, why looping in DCF is that big of a deal. Like on the surface, to me, that didn't seem like that big of a deal. It sounded like it was. But I think the bigger thing was having to do check-ins with the state once a year to make sure that they are getting the curriculum needed. I think that seemed like the bigger problem.
Okay. So I think there's a couple different things there. The measures feel a little bit like kidnapping. So you have this measure that if it's enacted, right, it will permit public school to keep your kids in public school against your wishes, right? So, I mean, if anything, I'm seeing on sort of social media boards and things and groups that you have Democrats talking about not voting Democrat anymore. You have people talking about not complying. People saying, you know, kind of come and get me. You know, the gas chamber is kind of last century. The new way is you cause people financial harm. You fine them or you ruin their reputation, right? You're child abusers. It's not this sort of hard totalitarianism of the past. It's sort of this soft totalitarianism. And people are saying that it's kind of awakening the sleeping giant. These homeschoolers, both on the left and the right, they're like, wait a minute. You know, we're innocent until proven guilty in this country. And if anything, the right to educate your kids was, it was reaffirmed just this year by the Supreme Court that it's, and if I can quote them correctly, parents, not the state, are primary with respect to the upbringing and education of their children. And this measure just, it challenges that. And it also violates the Fourth Amendment because you have a protection against unreasonable searches. So, you know, these are measures that are going to require families to disclose everyone that lives in your home. And so that causes a search of private information without a probable cause, in which all of that is a lawsuit kind of waiting to happen.
Right. Guilty till proven innocent sort of a thing. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Laws, they can't make people good. They can kind of guide you and restrain you and be there in time of crisis. But the work of making people good, right, fulfilling their purpose, is the work that happens in other places. It happens in families and in friendships and in neighborhood. And overtime regulation just contributes to this sort of mediocre society. We're regulate what's visible because that's easy, but then you have invisible causes, invisible effects of that, and so that you may have a kid languishing in public school who could be doing well homeschooling, but their parents are intimidated, and so they're not going to homeschool that child. I mean, if anything, Monday is the number one day for teen suicide, because kids have to go back to school. And that's an invisible effect of potentially of this regulation, right? Does that, I don't know if that answered your question.
It does. No, it absolutely does. I think, you know, that's why I feel like perspective matters. And the other thing, you know, the other half of it where I talked about having to do regular check-ins with the state to make sure they're on a curriculum, you know, path. I have always been curious about this because, you know, God, I mean, not that I have all the answers, certainly, but I wish there were certain things that were taught in schools. But I don't know it all. I'm not a teacher. I'm not about to pretend to be one. But things like financial literacy, I think, you know, we just passed a law a couple of years ago that puts one course by the time you graduate high school in financial literacy. I think that is not even close to being enough before a kid goes off to college. I think it's sad that we've gotten away from how to even read an analog clock, how to, you know, script write. I think there's a lot that we have changed the curriculum, not to mention, I hate the fact that we use Chromebooks. I hate it. My son was handed a Chromebook in kindergarten, and I have been so against that publicly for a very long time. And so there are things about the curriculum that changed even 30 years since I was in elementary school that I don't love. Mm-hmm. How do you come up with the curriculum for, you know, for homeschooling? I mean, to the point that you've got two kids in Georgia Tech, that's nothing to scoff at. That's incredible. So how do you come up with the curriculum?
Right. You know, homeschoolers have a saying. Some of them have a saying. And for example, for me, I loved my public school teachers. They were good people who I could look to as role models. My grandmother was illiterate, so I'm not against public schools' existence as a concept and as a model. But there are homeschoolers who will tell you that there are really only two problems with public school. Number one is everything that's taught there. And number two is everything that isn't, right? And so financial literacy is one of those things. So for me, I had no idea you were even going to ask me this, but it's awesome. Like I'm a huge fan of classical education. And if more kids in Bridgeport, for example, had the chance to get that, I think you would see a different city in 10 or 20 years. And when we think, oh, classical education, that's old, dead, white guys, you know. But we read Dante and Dostoevsky and Milton and read the Odyssey and the Iliad and Wuthering Heights and Frankenstein and Chesterton, because these are the best works throughout time that can teach you how to be human. The idea is that you can get all A's and still flunk life. Like, getting all A's is not a guarantee that you're going to do well in life. Mm-hmm. But if you spend time thinking about, okay, what are the wise decisions that people have made in history? What are the bad decisions people have made? Let's put ourselves in the shoes of this literary character, so that it's not so much about memorize information, dump it, forget it, and repeat it next week. I mean, I probably couldn't pass any of the tests that I took in high school. I'd probably fail plenty of those tests. In chemistry, although that teacher was an excellent model for someone who loved chemistry and can teach me about the wonder and the beauty and the harmony and the, you know, the beauty of chemistry, right? So that I learned, but couldn't actually pass the test anymore. So classical education is something that gives you that. But that's a hill I would die on personally in terms of classical education and choosing in terms of what to choose. But people can choose all kinds of things based on what their child really needs. That might not necessarily be for everyone. If anything, we have nature-based schools. Near me, there's a school for boys where they spend half the day outside chopping wood or whatever they do outside, and then they go inside and they read stories and learn history and do math, right?
That school? Where do you live, Sylvia? I'm not joking. That's where my son needs to go to school. Right. Where in the world is that school? I'm not joking.
Right.
I'm serious. Serious.
Sure. Now, you know, there is a nature-based school in West Hartford. I could think of that one. They're a micro school.
Okay. We're going to have to talk. I'm so serious. Yes. My kid would thrive there. He was born in Vermont. And my kid would thrive there. Yeah, that would. Yeah, we need to talk offline. Sylvia, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I so appreciate even just starting this conversation, getting more perspective. I hope you'll come back. I think this is something that I certainly learned a lot. I know my listeners also appreciate getting that kind of perspective on the air. So thank you so much and would love to talk again really soon. Thank you again.